Warning, the podcast you are about to listen to may have adult language and discuss adult themes not suitable for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Summer and now fall is upon us to talk college football from the highest points in the country, presented by the far end of the bench podcast and the variety sports network, your home for Rocky Mountain Athletic Conference football featuring Jimmy Pilato and Rev the Problem Coca, season three of Top of the Mountain podcast.
Woo, boys, it's that time. That worked out a little bit better than it did last week. I know Rev was on with me, and that intro didn't work quite as well. It worked this time, so I'm glad that it did. Back talking week two. We're catching you guys up. Unlike Kadarius Toney last night, we are catching you guys up on RMAC football. Oh, I got to start off hot. You know that. I do have Rev the Problem Coca. If you're watching on live on the YouTube channel, that is the lovely screen up to the top right corner. His camera is bugging out. He mentioned it when he got on. We're an amateur podcast. That's why you guys love us. So, Rev, we're glad you could still jump on. And we're talking actual RMAC football and real football in general. So I think it's a good day.
Right on. You know, an amateur podcast talking about amateur sports. You know how we have it. Intro's working better this time. However, my face cam, not so much. But either way, we'll give you quality content. Whether or not you see my face really doesn't make much of a difference in this show.
It'll be like when you're playing in the season, you're not actually ready until like week seven, which is why Western was always bad when we were there, unfortunately. We're also joined this week by another RMAC alumni, formerly of the CSU Pueblo Thunderwolves, by way of Greeley, Colorado, and Air Force Academy, Dom Pilato. You've seen him on a couple of my other shows. He was on Sunday Scaries a couple weeks ago, and now you're back, and you can be on this show because you have RMAC experience. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. Happy to kind of give, you know, a little bit of my perspective and talk about the last place that I ever played for any part of my football career. So it'll be fun.
Have you met Rev, by the way? I don't know. You've been on enough of my shows that you may have been on a show together now, but have you actually met, like, do you know who Rev is?
Yeah. Sorry, Bubba now wants to get in frame. Yeah, I remember there was one party where
it was like in 2020, that one.
Oh, man. Yeah. I remember Rev came over to watch the UFC when we watched, was it Gaethje? That was Gaethje's fight, wasn't it?
It was either Khabib, Gaethje. I don't know if it was that one. I remember we came over for that Amanda Nunes random featherweight title defense.
Yep. Now it's hitting me.
Oh, yeah, and I ended up driving Rev home because needed a ride, and I was the only one who was sober.
Well, that's how parties are meant to go.
We're gonna take one for the team, though.
You were underage. You were the designated DD. So I don't want to hear any crap. I don't want to hear any lip.
When am I not the designated DD? Like, I'm okay with it. That's where I want to be. I'm just saying, I'm always the designated DD.
Just because you don't like to have fun doesn't mean that you have to take the fun away from everybody else.
Oh, I have plenty of fun. Don't worry about it.
Yikes. All right. Before we get into college football, RMAC, we're going to recap the games that we mentioned last week, look ahead at a couple of matchups coming up, and then obviously we'll finish up with the standings just like we did last year. We're also going to look at the players of the week. NFL football started, and I know that college football has been around for a couple of weeks. High school football started a week before. Dom and I have been coaching our youth team, and I actually have flag football for the middle school starting. So it's here. Fall is upon us. There's no more waiting around. And I guess we can – I mentioned it already, so let's go ahead and talk about Thursday Night Football since that is the most relative football topic. Kansas City Chiefs on their banner night, minus Travis Kelce and Chris Jones, lose to the Detroit Lions by 1 point. Rev, you weren't on Talking a Gridiron, so you didn't give your picks, but were you expecting, I guess, a tougher game for the Chiefs? Did you expect the Lions to win? I know Dom and I both picked them in our weekly pick 'em, but did you expect the Lions to do that?
I mean, when you have two out of your three best players on the team, two of those being real game changers and guys who are definitely in the top three of their position, not playing, it definitely takes an effect to the point where you can see the turmoil. Even with those guys playing, I just think the Lions are so feisty. You see the way that they call their plays. You saw that fake punt in the first half, the way they'll hit you in the mouth, physical O-line. Like, no matter what, Detroit, whether they win or lose, is going to give you a tough game. So there's definitely a possibility once you take away X factors like Travis Kelce and Chris Jones. And we saw yesterday, it definitely exposed the rest of the receiving room. Like, once this person leaves, you know, it's going to be hard getting receivers that could constantly separate, getting Kadarius Toney to catch the ball. I know he's definitely the man receiving the blunt force of the criticism, and ultimately that's going to play an effect. I thought the defense did well in Chris Jones's absence, but on offense, there's definitely some heavy lifting by Mahomes, and it just wasn't enough.
It was weird because technically the tight end position, not having Kelce, they still got a lot of production. I will say what they missed is that ability to just convert every single third down known to man, because Kelsey's always somehow open. And then Kadarius Toney had two really big drops. I'm going to go with the fact that he probably watched the replacements the night before and he thought Clifford Franklin was somebody he should strive for. Dom, were you able to catch any of the game? What'd you think of what you were able to see and of the opening night game?
You know, don't get me wrong. The Chiefs are a good team. They have been the last however many years. And I think that they're going to do just fine this year. But I think that they're kind of on that downslope where, you know, they had Mahomes, they caught him like right at his peak, signed him to that 10-year deal. And now that they have him for 10 years, they're going to start dropping. Kind of like we saw when they were playing the Eagles. I mean, obviously they ended up winning in the Super Bowl, but, it's kind of more because the Eagles beat themselves more than what the Chiefs did to try to stop the Eagles. So, I mean, I watched that game the other night, and it was actually a really good season opener. And I picked the Lions only because they kind of caught fire towards the end of last year and started having some really nice success. And I thought that they were going to build on that. And obviously I ended up being right, thankfully. But, you know, it's just kind of hit or miss, I feel like, with the Chiefs now. It just kind of depends on what week you catch them on.
All right, we also have three different fan bases in the NFL represented, me being the Bengals, Greg being the Steelers, and Dom is a Jets fan. So speaking of your team's game specifically, the Jets will play the Bills Monday night. Steelers play the 49ers. I've talked at length because we've had Brian on the Talking the Gridiron show on Variety Sports Network for the past couple weeks, so I know – the Steelers are playing the 49ers, and then the Bengals are going into Cleveland, which they haven't won a game in Cleveland in the last five tries. So of those games, let's talk about your team specifically. Dom, what are you expecting from this Aaron Rodgers New York Jets squad?
You know, I'm expecting a lot of offensive fireworks. That is, as long as the offensive line can hold up and allow Rodgers to kind of set up and throw it deep. He is that gunslinger. He's getting a little bit older now, so he's got to have enough time in the pocket to actually get the ball down the field. But I do think that he's the addition that we've needed, and he's that kind of older presence that will help this team get to where they want to get to. Now, we've kind of talked about it a little bit. It's hard enough to improve your winning record by one game or one or two games a year, let alone going from a non-playoff team to a playoff team and adding four or so wins onto your record. So am I expecting like a Super Bowl win? Not expecting it. Would I love a Super Bowl win? Absolutely. But this first week, we really got to get past the Bills, and we already know that's going to be a hard test with Josh Allen in the backfield commanding that offense. So I'm really hoping just for a great game, and I'm hoping that the Jets end up on top.
Rev, what about you and your Steelers? I don't know how you like that matchup going against the 49ers, especially now that Nick Bosa will be on the other side, signed a huge extension, making him the highest paid defensive lineman until Chris Jones somehow either works out a deal or maybe it's going to last for a little bit. But what are you expecting? You got a team that they're still over 500, but they were definitely down last year. Do you expect them to be the same, improve, or do you think they might get worse?
So over the past 2 years, the Steelers tend to open the season up very well against know, teams that may have been AFC contenders the year before, because back in 2021, they show up in week one and they beat the Buffalo Bills. Last year, they show up week one, and you know what happened there with the Bengals. So Pittsburgh is a team where they may show up in week one as an underdog, but ultimately, they're going to come ready. They start off very quickly. And, of course, San Francisco is definitely a very tough matchup when it comes to the weapons that they have on the offensive side of the ball. You can say what you want about Brock Purdy at quarterback, but when you combine just Debo Samuel, Kyle Juszczyk, George Kittle, Brandon Ayuk, you know, McCaffrey and Mitchell, and just everything that they have there, like, it's definitely, you know, it puts defensive coordinators in a torture rack just being able to account for all of that. However, something that I see that's exploitable is that right side of the offensive line replacing Mike McGlinchey from last year, who went to the Broncos. And with our pass rush, it can definitely give San Francisco some fits and perhaps slow it down, making an uglier, low-scoring Pittsburgh style of game. And I think we could very much win that. We start off seasons fast, and I'm expecting to win.
There are very few, because we're all three former offensive linemen, there are very few defensive linemen. Obviously, I wasn't able to make the NFL level, but I will still say there's very few offensive linemen or defensive linemen that would scare me if I had to play that against them in the NFL. TJ Watt and I think Aaron Donald and Chris Jones are the top three on that list. I remember it was back in 2019 after my little hiatus from the team being in the hospital. We were watching the Monday night game. It was Bengals versus Steelers. It was the last year of Andy Dalton. And I swear I saw Andy Dalton get sacked from his blind side, and he hit his head on his right tackle's ass going down. The TJ Watt's just an unreal animal, and you could tell. Like, that's why they struggled last season. They were set up to be at least decent, compete for the wild card, and they still did. But if TJ Watt's there and not injured, if he's there with the presence, that's a presence that any team would appreciate. So I will give TJ Watt his flowers. I will not give anybody else on the Steelers their flowers. You know me, Rev. For my team, the Bengals, I'm excited that we get Burrow. He's going to be healthy. They're going to be back. And the team, this is the most expectations that I can remember for a Bengals team for a long time. It's the first team to ever win two back-to-back division titles, first team in franchise history to go back-to-back AFC championship games. And they just paid Joe Burrow 5 years, $275 million, and I think it's $216 guaranteed. So you got to get something. You've invested too heavily. You've been too good. You've been right there too many times. It's time to get over the hump. If they don't get it done this season, the core is going to look wildly different.
Yeah, without a doubt here, you still somehow, like, you have that receiving core that's still there. Hopefully the O-line – I mean, I say hopefully is there on the Bengals, right? I don't know. I just like to see good football players play. If the offensive line can stay intact, which I thought really – was a falling point of last season when you have Akeem Adeniji trying to block Chris Jones one-on-one in the AFC championship game. Didn't go very well for him. So you have the pieces together. The defense is pretty balanced. Even in some of those struggles that Burrow may have had in some playoff games, you get to credit the Bengals defense for really stepping up. So they're balanced there. Offensively, you still have your weapons. Joe Mixon seems to be a guy who's willing to stay around, even though we've seen running backs get frustrated with their pay, and you have all the pieces intact to do it. However, yeah, the AFC North is still going to be a shark tank. You know, I can see scenarios where all of these teams could be really good.
I can see scenarios where they get three teams in the playoffs, and I can see scenarios where, like, the entire division ends 9-8 because they've absolutely kicked the crap out of each other and somebody has to win. I think it's going to be the most competitive division. I'm obviously very biased. A lot of people might say the AFC East, which is where Dom's team currently resides with the Bills and everything like that. But for now, I would say that the Bengals, they're my pick to win the AFC North. I know we don't do divisional picks because it's a college football show, but I figured we'd talk a little bit about the NFL, and with that starting, we had to mention it. First, we're going to get into the players of the week. By the way, I haven't mentioned it yet. Follow at FEOTVBHOD. If you're watching live, subscribe to the YouTube channel that you're watching, and be sure to subscribe to the Variety Sports Network as well. Continue to support us. The more support we get, the better content we're able to bring to you all. Players of the week from week one. RMAC every single week picks three players, offense, defense, and special teams. Normally, I think they try and pick different schools. This week, two out of three are from Colorado School of Mines, the number two team in Division II. All of the country, by the way. I don't know. We definitely didn't mention that. I don't know if you two are aware. Colorado Mines is a top five national powerhouse after the last two seasons. They've had.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, they proved it last week. It was a very reversed a reverse kind of matchup as the one that happened last year, where this time it was Mize that jumped ahead, but had to hold on and get that game-winning field goal. And yeah, they're still on top, and of course they deserve the top five matchup, getting into the semifinals in 2021, getting to the national championship in 2022. And yeah, Ferris State didn't do some very nice, didn't do very nice things to them, but
Ferris State's so damn good. Ferris State's like right on the cusp of D1AA. It's insane. players of the week, John Matoka, no surprise, eighth-year quarterback for Colorado School of Mines. He went 27 for 41, had a 65% completion percentage, threw for 327 yards, two touchdowns, and he had to orchestrate a drive. They started at their own 25-yard line to get that game-winning field goal. He got them in the spot to be able to make it, so it was ugly, and it shouldn't have been that close, but Matoka was definitely one of the reasons why. Other teammate from Colorado School of Mines, special teams player of the week, Blake Dowd, in his college debut. I'm going to mention this just in case Garrett might be listening, our former punter at Western State, just so he knows I understand what a good punting outing looks like. On six punts, Dowd averaged 49.2 yards. He had six punts land inside the 20, and three of his punts were 50-plus yards. So he gave the Lakers starting field position within their 20 pretty much the entire time where they were trying to make their comeback. That those two Colorado School of Mines players, those were the big storylines as to why they were able to hold on to win. Dom, what do you think about, are they worthy players of the week, or do you think maybe it's a little bit of the Mines rub?
You know, it's unmistakable. You can't talk about college football, especially Division II college football, without mentioning the Colorado School of Mines anymore. You want to talk about, Ferris State being on the cusp of D1AA? I would make the argument that Colorado School of Mines, if they were just a little bit bigger, they'd be on the cusp of D1AA as well. They have created a very, very strong culture around that program. And so it's kind of hard to say, oh, no, there's no Mines rub. But I would still say that these players did earn their Player of the Week honors. You know, at the end of the day, no matter what team you play on, it's your performance that you're getting evaluated on for these honors. So, yes, I think the Colorado School of Mines, them having that tag kind of helped them out, but they're the ones who earned it. So,
Rev, what do you think?
Yeah. Well, there's no complaints about Matoka winning Offensive Player of the Week. However, was it the Black Hill State player? Who's the Black Hill State player that got Defensive Player?
Want to hear his name?
Something Quinones, right?
Doodles Quinones.
Yeah, so he had a good game. Yeah, he had a good game there, and he also had a tackle for loss and two passes broken up. So he earned it. However, yeah, that Black Hill State defense got gashed up a little bit. I mean, they got the built-in excuse that they played a Division I team and actually played them pretty tough. So, yeah, you could take a good sign from that. But, yeah, Quinones, I'm not going to say he didn't deserve it. However, there were some good performances there with Western's defense. But CSU Pueblo did. I think they forced four fumbles and had two picks. He probably could have picked someone from there too. But Quinones had a good game himself.
Yeah, six. He had the team lead for tackles with 10 total. He had six solo tackles, one tackle for loss, like Reb mentioned, two pass breakups, and he recovered two block kicks that the Yellow Jackets had. So I put it in there because the name, like when I was writing it down, I was like, is somebody messing with me? And then I looked up their roster. No, it's Doodles Quinones. Doodles. Like you're drawing, instead of taking notes, you're doodling in class. Doodles Quinones. Awesome game from him. 10 tackles is a huge feat at the D2 level. And Matoka throwing for 330 yards, being able to beat the, because that was a 2-versus-3 matchup last week when Grand Valley played Colorado Mines. You kind of get a little bit of a rub just for being in the best game of the weekend. And I would say, you know, it was probably the most competitive game outside of maybe the Shadron game, which we're going to get to when we look ahead at week two's schedule. But for week one, Matoka, you've got to expect, like, he's played so much college football, he's going to be good. He's going to be in the right spot.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he came in college. I'm pretty sure he started his college career before we both did. Like, he's
– Rev, we were a fresh – he was a true freshman when we were, like, redshirt sophomores. So our third year was his first year. So the fact that he's still there and he's still – I think now he's finally listed as a senior. But remember, he kicked the crap out of us when he was a true freshman. No doubt. He came into Western after Eckler knocked him out of the playoffs and national rankings for 2 years and just absolutely dog-walked us in gold.
Yeah, it's like Division II's Case Keenum, just sitting around forever, breaking records.
It was him and Zeman. Now that Zeman's not there, I think we're gonna get to finally see how good Matoka is. No, those were the three players of the week. Shout out John Matoka, Doodles Quinones, and Blake Dowd. Awesome performances. Let's look a little bit now at the recap. So we talked about every game, or at least mentioned every games, every matchup. The big ones that happened, we're starting with Mines and Grand Valley, because Grand Valley is going to come back and host an RMAC team in CSU Pueblo. Domini's sister is actually out there right now, so if she happens to be tuning in or she hears this later, shout out, Roxy. You're awesome. The fact that you got a Division II program from Pueblo, Colorado, all the way to Grand Island, Michigan, that is a feat within itself. But last week, Mines held on 31-28 to get the win over the number three ranked Grand Valley State Lakers. They didn't drop far after that loss. They're only down to fourth overall in the country, but Mines stays put at their number two spot. I already mentioned Matoka, but I'm interested for this one. Rev, we mentioned they almost came back, and they were pretty much in the better situation last year. But I would almost be a little bit nervous if I'm a Colorado School of Mines or Diggers fan, because you should have been able to run away with that game. I get that it's a good team that you're playing against. You got to play all 60 minutes. But if you're up, I think they were up by like 14 points, you got to be able, if you're going to be a national champion, just to put a team away. Figure out how to win. I know it's week one, but you don't need to make it a last-second field goal to be able to win when you scored 28 points in the first three quarters.
Yeah, and that almost is like the separating factor from a team like a Ferris State, who's like at the top of the top, versus a team that's kind of flirting around the edges of being that level of a team, where if you got them beat, don't play with your food. You know, you got to finish them at that point, and you got to be a little worried about that. Like, from the, if you're just expecting Colorado School of Mines to be a team that's going to compete in the Final Four every year, then yeah, you're definitely encouraged about this. And you know, they're going to give Angelo State a tough game next week. But if you're a Mines fan that just wants them to be that national championship level team, like, you want them to, you know, keep the foot on the other team's neck when they have them in that position.
I would agree with that. Dom, what do you think? Is this nerve-wracking for Colorado School of Mines, or is it par for the course because you happen to be playing a team that is just as good as you?
You know, because we've all played against the Colorado School of Mines. I guess I'm the one who played against them the most recently, but they approach every game the same. And sure, this might be kind of up there. You know, it might be a little bit nerve-wracking, but they approach everything the exact same. They're calm, cool, collected. They go out there, they play their game, and playing their game wins 99% of the time. Just last week, they took down a very, very good team in Grand Valley. And
who,
so
you're also the only one on the show who's played against them.
Yeah. And, I will be completely honest. They are a scary team to, have to go against. But you know, I think it's just kind of par for the course for Mines. I think that they are, still kind of, using to their advantage some of their older kids, but they have some younger guys who are coming in who are going to be great replacements for them in here in the next few years. So I would say that we're going to be hearing about Colorado School of Mines for at least a few more years to come, if not longer.
Rev, do you have anything to add before we go on to the next one? What were you going to say?
Not a whole lot there besides, yeah, you like to see the defense close things out. While the outside linebacker combo looks very promising with Jaden Healy and Nolan Reeve, who I believe was he RMAC player of the year last year? Or, like, he's always been, like, RMAC All-American kind of in the runnings, where you saw signs of it. They both combined for three sacks. So you like to see the pass rush there with that outside linebacker trio. You know, they've always ran that very vanilla 3-4 defense. They don't do a lot of exotic blitzes. And they rely on those edge rushers on the outside to get their pressures for them, and they don't need to blitz. So they play a very vanilla-based, disciplined defense. No one's really out of position too much. So, yeah, you just like to hope that pass rush keeps it up while the other elements of the defense steps it up too.
That is something that I remember going back to our days back in the 2019 pre-COVID and everything like that. Their pass rush, they weren't blitzing anybody, but their DNs were handfuls for everyone. You pretty much had to use two guys to block one of them. So, they, like I said, next week, Mines is going to take on Angelo State out of the Lone Star Conference. I didn't see them on the national rankings, but I could be wrong. Again, we're an amateur show. I just did this research very quickly after I got home from school today. Grand Valley is hosting CSU Pueblo this weekend. So we'll see how they fare against their second RMAC opponent of the week of the season so far. Let's move on, because this is a topic. I've called them Fort Loser, and it seems like I'm being mean. But if you look on your screen right now, I have the last date that the Fort Lewis Skyhawks have actually won a football game. And here's how long it's been. Rev and I were still like actively playing with multiple years of eligibility left the last time Fort Lewis won a football game. It's been 1,434 days. And this last weekend, they took on William Jewell, which is an NAIA school out of Missouri, and got trounced 42-6. Like, we can't even bring the Sisters of the Poor out to Durango to try and give Fort Lewis a win, because they're just going to walk all over the Skyhawks. I don't know if you remember, Rev, but like our second season playing against Fort Lewis, they were one of the tougher teams to scheme against because of their defensive line moved, and they had players and they have athletes. And maybe it's the pandemic, but they haven't won a game since before the pandemic. They finished the 2019 season on like a 6-game losing streak. And then since, it's just 4 years of the absolute same misery. I don't know what to do with Fort Lewis right now. Like, should you drop to NAIA? Should you drop to D3? Should you cut football entirely? Because who's going to want to go out there and have to drive 7 hours from Denver just to get the crap beat out of them every week? Like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough position to be put in, whereas there may be a situation where they have to move the football program in. How does that affect the other sports in the athletic department and what they're doing? And now they have to move down another division, or the football program gets cut. Maybe other programs get cut because, well, they may not be raising the funds in like the football program normally does. So it puts things in a rough spot. But yeah, Fort Lewis, like you said, was a team that at the very least, they weren't always explosive offensively, but they had physical lines. You knew you were going to be in for a tough matchup. They had a defensive tackle while we were there who was a 2-time first-team RMAC player.
Yep, so, George Marapong. Shout out, George.
Yeah, so they had guys and physical players that could at least give you some fits and slow you down, especially on that front seven. And now it's all missing, and it just seems like a very lifeless program right now. You might have to move them out. Consider cutting a program. Like, something has to be done here.
Dom, what do you have? Do you have any grand schemes that can get this team out of almost a 1,500-day losing streak?
You know, I don't. I have no idea. I have no idea what even to say, because last year, playing against them, I would have told you that give their guys a year to mature, because they were young, and I think they're still young. But I would have told you give them a year to mature and they'd at least win one game. And I mean, it's only week two of the season, so maybe that statement isn't untrue. At least it hasn't been proven untrue yet. But it's like you said, they just brought in an NAIA school who, truthfully, it should have been a gimme game, and they got trounced. And it's just hard to even – kind of try to come up with any sort of solution, because it's like, well, no matter what you say, it doesn't seem like anything is going to change. I did the math. They have not won a game in 3.9 years, almost 4 years. It's like 3.97 years. That's just ridiculous. And I told you in the car when we were driving to Little League practice just a couple hours ago, they haven't won a game since longer, and this is going to probably sound weird coming on a football show, but they haven't won a game since before Roman Reigns won his world title. And Roman Reigns has had the world title for 3 years.
Man, they haven't won a game since the Biden administration started.
Dom, weren't you in high school in 2019?
10-5, 2019. No, that would have been my first semester of college.
Okay, so you were just graduated. Dom is now 23, and he would have – sorry, 22. Roxy's 23. I have too many siblings. I've tried to talk to mom and dad about this. He was still a teenager, like barely – not even 18 yet when they last won a football game. That is – oh, my goodness. And I just looked up the box score, by the way. True or false, did Fort Lewis ever have the lead in this game, guys?
False.
Did they have it at first?
No. No, they – well, let's see. William Jewell scored a touchdown, and then Fort Lewis scored and didn't get the extra point. So they were down 7-6. They didn't even – they. The only time that the score was tied was the opening kickoff. Then William Jewell scored the first touchdown, and Fort Lewis never even gained the lead in this game. And to give up 42 to an NAIA school – I mean, Rev and I played on some bad Western teams. Dom was giving me shit in the car. Like, I was saying Matoka used to kick the crap out of us. He goes, Jimmy – I don't want to say it. It's like, yeah, I know. Everybody used to kick the crap out of us because we had three really, really bad seasons when I was there. But if I played an NAIA school or if I played at an NAIA school, I could probably score 42 points in a season. You give me 11 games, I could probably get 9 touchdowns. However many touchdowns. I'm not good at math, Dom. 9 touchdowns? Am I right? No. 6. 6 touchdowns.
6 touchdowns.
I could get 6 touchdowns in a season. Just put me behind the biggest lineman that you got, and we could figure this thing out. And Fort Lewis still can't even figure anything out.
Yeah.
My only solution would be to just switch Fort Lewis with the NAIA school, just put them into the RMAC and have Fort Lewis go to the NAIA. But even then,
you'd have William Jewell on a 1,400-day losing streak, too.
Yeah.
It's getting to the point where it's like, well, okay, we can switch them into NAIA, and if that doesn't work, what are we going to do? Move them down into the 5A state tournament? Or, like, yeah. You know, like, I don't
– and we're going to go play Durango High School and Gunnison High School. Maybe you guys can get a win. And what were you going to say, Rev?
Yeah, so there seems to be just a difference in physical disparity with the teams that they play, because sometimes, like, well, something that my old offensive line coach used to say is you got to run the ball and you got to stop the run. And usually that's a good symbolization of the other team's line and your line. When you look at the statistics, Fort Lewis rushed for 92 yards and William Jewell rushed for 206. And usually those running disparities show a difference in physicality and another team just beating up the other one because they didn't run very well and they gave up a lot on the ground on the other side.
I really, like Dom said, I have very little of what I can actually say to console Skyhawk fans. If you're a Fort Lewis Skyhawks fan, congratulations, because you have way more stick-to-itiveness than I ever did. But man, 1400 plus days, and it doesn't look like, because here's the thing, if you're smart as a Fort Lewis AD, you would try to schedule another like NAIA D3 school before you get into your RMAC schedule, because you're gonna go play Mines and get 85 put on you for like the 2 out of 3 years that you've played them last. Like, Fort Lewis hosted Mines in the 2021 season coming off the pandemic, and Mines won 84 to nothing. I rarely score 84 points when I'm playing NCAA football or Madden. The fact that they scored 84 points in real life, that doesn't seem like it should be an actual stat. Fort Lewis is going up against another NAIA school this week in Arizona Christian, so maybe they can right the ship. William Jewell is going to play Kentucky Wesleyan. But I needed to bring that up because I mentioned it last year and I feel like people might think I'm being unfair. But if you're going to not want me to talk about your losing streak, probably don't have the biggest losing streak that I've ever seen. That's all I'm going to say. Last game that we're going to recap from week 1, Western Colorado. Rev and I talked about it a lot last week because that is where we both played and we're both alumni from. It was the game that they needed, because everything that I've seen, and Western was picked in the top 3 of the conference, along with CSU Pueblo and Colorado Mines. You needed to be able to come back and beat West Texas, especially when you weren't able to beat them on the road. And if you could flex your muscles a little bit, which is what they did, final score of that game was Western Colorado 28, West Texas A&M 6. You beat them in a soccer stadium. You beat them at elevation. You beat them at home. And West Texas, if you know anything about West Texas, if you've seen Friday Night Lights, they love their football. So the fact that they got beat by a bunch of mountain men from Colorado is not going to sit well for them. Don, what do you think about this Western? I mean, what did you think when you were getting ready to play Western? Western actually beat you when you guys were at CSU Pueblo, something that Rev and I can never say. But what did you see out of the Mountaineers from recent years? Because obviously that's been since Rev and I have been out of the program.
You know, I think that they've been trying to follow a formula where they're kind of in that rebuilding stage, and they're still in that rebuilding stage, but they're kind of getting towards the back end of it where they can actually start putting some of that foundation to work. And, you know, going into the game last year, we kind of looked at it like there's no way these guys should beat us. Yeah, we kind of got embarrassed in that game, I won't lie. I think that was the first year in, what was it, like 4 or 5?
Where it's been a while.
Where they came in and beat CSU Pueblo. Not only did they beat CSU Pueblo, but it was in our own stadium, which hurt a little bit. But, you know, they're following the correct formula, and they're kind of getting the results that you would expect, trying to put their team back together and kind of return it to the former glory. But, yeah, I mean, they are definitely on the right track, and they're continually moving up skill level-wise, and they're really focusing on their foundation. So that's the right way to go.
Yeah, so looking at this Western team over the last couple of years, it's just – they're just grinders. It's kind of how you describe it. They don't seem to be a team to beat you with a lot of flash on the offensive side of the ball. Like, there isn't that one, like, really ever since Austin Ekeler left, there hasn't been, like, that one, like, offensive game. You're like, yeah, Josh Cummings did definitely have some special years in there. But it just seems to be a team that they could do just enough, you know, with the passing game. It's not going to wall you over, but there's some competency there. Right now, we got a two-headed rushing attack with Hogan and Davon Butler over there. Davon, actually a guy who was around while we were playing. So yeah, they got that going for us. I mean, they got that going for Western. And another thing is just the defense. They'll play games with you. They'll send different rushes. They'll sold it.
Oh, that's
different blitzes and twists. And
Rip, describe what fall camp was like trying to get ready for a Todd Howard defense.
Yeah, it's definitely like you got to keep your head on a swivel. You got to be gap disciplined. You see a defensive end crossing your face as a guard, you better not hit that guy because the linebacker is going to come and shoot right through that B gap. And
are they blitzing 15 guys? What the hell?
Yeah, like that's the thing because they've always, for the most part, Western's always been more of an undersized team. And while they're getting bigger, they're still mostly undersized. So the defense will compensate that by throwing these blitzes that will just play head games with an offensive line and just put it, just no matter who Coach Hour has in his or in his toolkit, he's going to find a way to put a very good, respectable defense on the field. Even in our losing seasons, the defense actually kept us close in some games. And yeah, the kudos to Coach Hour and what he's doing over there.
If I'm going to pick one guy out of the RMAC coaching staff, and obviously it's a little bit biased and skewed because I haven't been around other guys as much as I've been around Coach Hour, I'm pretty sure he was a head coach before, a guy that I would have expected to be out of Gunnison by this point with the defenses he's been able to put together. Like, give that guy a program. He's a hell of a recruiter. Like, it's tough to play for him. It's no joke. We talked about it last week. The defensive practices were always way harder than the offensive practices as a Western Colorado Mountaineer. But, oh, my God, that guy can scheme up some crazy blitzes. I never knew what a smack blitz was until we were at Western for fall camp one year, and they were sending, like, 8 guys. And we're going to have to figure out how to block 8 blitzers with 6 guys in protection. It's just it's ridiculous. It's, like I said, it's like Rush Hour 2 when Chris Tucker gets kicked in the face of the massage parlor. Which one of y'all kicked me?
Where are these blitzes coming from?
Which one of y'all hit me in the face? Which linebacker was that so I can go get him? And then if I go get him, then they're going to put somebody else behind him. Western's got another Texas team. They're going to be hosting UT Permian Basin, another West Texas team. And then West Texas is going, and they're going to play Adams. They're hosting Adams State this weekend in their Hall of Fame game. So you can picture what they think of Adams State. Pretty much the same thing that we all picture of Adams State here on this show. I don't know if I'll get an Adams State alumni on. It'd be really hard for him, Rev, and I to coexist, but we'll see. We'll see if we can. That's our recap from week one. And now it's time to get our crystal balls out. Pause. I'm going to say pause on that because if you hear that out of context, it's going to seem weird. We're going to talk about some week 2 matchups and what we expect to see coming up on the gridiron. Shadron versus Augustana. Augustana is a national D2 powerhouse. So if you're not too familiar with D2 football, Augustana is out of South Dakota. 2 years before last year, they were actually both in the playoffs and competing to win their conference. It's going to be a tough one. Shadron coming into the game 1-0. Augustana also 1-0. But Shadron, let's talk about them, because the first season of this show, when it was just me and nobody else, I'm sure like 8 people listened the entire season, but I said Shadron should be very good. Shadron should be able, like, they have the financial backing. If you've ever been to that stadium, that's the only thing in Shadron, Nebraska. The only thing within like 8 hours of Shadron, Nebraska, is to go watch the Eagles play. And they almost beat Angelo 2 years ago, had a 14-point lead at half and blew it. They had a 22-point lead at the end of the first quarter this last weekend against Valley City College, and they still only won 35-34. They blew a 22-point lead. So, Rev, what is the issue with the Shadron State Eagles team? Because you know pretty well. You played them quite a bit. They're tough, but why haven't they been able to put it together?
No clue. There was definitely a time kind of in the mid-2010s when they were up in the upper echelon of the RMAC, but now it just seems that, like you said, they just can't put two and two together. Last year, it was a very well-set-up defense, very dangerous pass rush to deal with, but the offense was shaky. You look at week one here, and the NAU transfer they got at quarterback, I forgot, B. Miller is the last name, but regardless, they were able to put up a lot of points. Yeah, it was a little erratic. There's two interceptions in there too, but the passing game looked like a threat. But then the defense comes up and they give up 34 points. And what was it, Quincy University that they played last week? So very up and down. Like, you look into this week, like, I would not be surprised at all if they beat Augustana, which their team, maybe they can finish, 1 year they might finish with a 6-7 win season. Then there are other years when they may just sneak their way into one of the final spots of the playoffs, and they're just kind of being right there. However, I think I might just go out on a limb and say that Shadron State, this will be the week that they may be able to put it together and get an upset victory, since they can at least put up points on offense. So I think maybe they pull it off, and they still have Hunter O'Connor as a pass rusher who kind of broke out last year to produce fits on the other end. I think Shadron pulls off the upset, but yeah, the consistency has been a problem for him.
It's Heath B. Miller, by the way. Heath B. Miller is the quarterback for Shadron, and thank you for correcting me. Valley City played South Dakota Mines, which is why they were on my mind, because South Dakota is going to be the next game that we talk about. But Quincy College out in Illinois, it was cool to see a team from Nebraska be able to travel and still score 35 points, Dom. What do you think about the Shadron team? We obviously, our cousin is one of the offensive linemen. I texted him last week, great win, because I did not expect them to win. I thought they were going to possibly get blown out. I did not know what to expect from Shadron coming into the season, but it seems like they always can build a lead, but it's that holding on to the lead part that they don't quite get yet.
I will say, I kind of witnessed that Shadron pass rush firsthand last year, and I guess I'll put it this way. They were kind of eating our lunch a little bit. Stevie Kroll kind of had to have his head on a swivel, and pretty much as soon as he set
up – maybe you should try scrambling.
Yeah, pretty much as soon as he started setting up for a pass, there was somebody in his face. So they are – I mean, no, that's no joke. They are very well put together on the defensive side, and you know, it was actually a really close game last year. We did end up pulling it out towards the end, but there was a time there where it was like, hit or miss, who knows. About putting it together, I don't know. Augustana, they're a powerhouse. I feel like, you know, if they put it together, maybe they have a shot at winning, but they're going to have to play pretty much a perfect game to pull one over on Augustana. So, if I was to choose, my heart would say go with Shadron, because obviously we have family ties, but my head's telling me, you got to go with Augustana. So I'm torn. I'm torn on this one. I think it's going to be a good game, though.
My question for Shadron, do you guys know that there's 60 minutes in a football game and not just 30? Because, like I said, 2 years ago, Angelo State was a top 10 team in the country. They came into Shadron, Nebraska, the only thing within 500 miles, and the fact that you could not keep a 14-point lead for the last 30 minutes of the game, that's just It's ridiculous. It's bad. It's bad football. And the fact that you couldn't keep a 22-point lead that you got after the first 15 minutes, you got to play 60. There's no shortcuts. There is no extra credit. You have to get all the way to the end. Rev, were you going to chime in there too?
I kind of said my piece when it comes to this game. Like, yeah, I got Shattering coming up with the upset here. Risky pick considering Augustana has an established program, but they have the pieces. They have the potential. But, yeah, playing a complete football game is going to be the mission.
I had some interest in Augustana. It's actually a sticker on on our PS4 that we have here at the house because I was – I don't know. They sent me some letters when I was a senior in high school, and we had a running back at Cherry Creek that ended up going there, DJ Luke, after we won the state championship back in 2015. But yeah, they're kind of up and down. And the last two years before last season, they finished 9-3. Last year was a 7-4 outing, a kind of a down year. I have to assume them traveling, this is going to be like if they can get to 2-0 before they start their conference schedule, they're going to be in a good spot because they have University of Sioux Falls. It's not a cakewalk to win their conference. So they're going to have to win all of these out-of-conference games to be even considered for, like, maybe if you don't win your conference, maybe you get into the top eight of your super region. But they're going to be in a tough spot no matter what. South Dakota Mines and Truman State is our other game that we're looking at. South Dakota Mines, Rev and I talked about last week, explosive offense. And in my notes here, they pitched a shutout in the second half. So they have experience at quarterback. If you see the thumbnail for this week's episode, it is Johansson, their quarterback over there at South Dakota Mines, the Hard Rockers. They had a 200-yard rushing performance, 5.1 yards a carry, and Johansson is going to put you in the right spot. They had a 31-14 win, shutting Valley City State out in the second half. Truman State didn't have quite as emphatic of a victory, which is who they're playing, but they did also pitch a shutout in the second half. So we have two defenses that are coming off of really successful outings, and it's going to be interesting to see whose offense is going to take over. Rev, what do you think about this South Dakota Mines versus Truman State matchup that we have here?
I see it kind of as a program in Truman State that has been pretty consistent over the past few years versus more of an ascending program in South Dakota School of Mines, who's trying to get to where Truman is at right now. And what I like with South Dakota Mines is, while last year was a lot more passing dominant with Bridges and Johansson, they still have the ability to throw. However, in the first game, there was a little bit more balance because I believe it was a running back, Jalen Fry, who nearly averaged 10 yards per carry in last week's matchup. He has something around 15 carries for 136 yards. So they showed the ability in which they could also run the ball to go with the pass. And while the defense did pitch a second half shutout, which showed that they could close the game, I feel like Truman State's going to be a step up in competition, and they'll hang in there tough. But I just think Truman is the difference, the disparity between who they played last week in Valley City State and Truman is going to show a difference here. They'll be met with more resistance. And, of course, their offense is capable of putting up some points. But I think on the other end, Truman is going to put theirs up as well and come up with the victory.
South Dakota Mines, since they came into the RMAC, have always had the offensive firepower to do something, but they just never have the defense. Their games were 40-plus point shootouts, and maybe that's different this year. Dom, what did you see out of South Dakota Mines? Did you make a trip out to South Dakota? Have you ridden a bus for that long?
Yeah, but we made the trip out. Sorry, I'm adjusting because all of a sudden I got a cramp in my back. We made the trip out to Black
Hills. Perks of being a former offensive lineman.
Yeah, we made the trip all the way out to Black Hills. So that was the trip that we got to go see Mount Rushmore, which was cool. I'd never seen that before. And I mean, it's a ways out there. It is. This week, South Dakota Mines, we hosted them last year. They are no joke. That is for sure. So, I mean, personally, if we were picking, I'd pick them. But I think, again, this is really, I don't see any bad games this week. I think everybody's going to be competitive. Sure, maybe you have one that a team that you expect to come out on top, but really anything can happen. Anything can happen any given day. So
they got to go all the way out to Kirksville, Missouri. So it's a 12-hour drive for them to play the other schools in Colorado in the RMAC. That's going to be a haul. And at least it's not during daylight savings because we always travel to South Dakota Mines after daylight savings. So it's dark for 8 of the 12 hours that you're on the bus. Maybe it'll be a little bit different. Maybe their coaching staff has a better plan to get them out there, but that's a long, long bus ride. And it's hard to play a football game when you've been sitting on a bus for 10 plus hours. It's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, hopefully they take that halfway stop to Cheyenne like we always did. Yeah, that's not an easy
practice at Cheyenne Central High School. By the way, Rev, I didn't tell you this. Our high school, so when I was coaching at Castleview this year, we wrestled against a duel against Grand Central Cheyenne. Is it the school that we practiced at that one year that we stopped in Cheyenne? Yeah. We wrestled against them this year at their elementary school cafeteria in any other place. But they were tough. And the weird thing about those schools outside of Colorado, Colorado's open enrollment. But if you go to some of these other states like Wisconsin, a Nebraska, a South Dakota, Cheyenne, Wyoming, that community loves their athletics. So I would have to assume that Truman is also one of those places that love their athletics. South Dakota Mines always has tailgaters, and they always have guys sitting over on our sidelines when we travel up there in the back of their pickup trucks. But you're not in Rapid City anymore this week. So if I were to pick, I would say Truman has the upper hand. But South Dakota Mines is, like Dom said, they're no joke. They could definitely put this thing. They can make it a tough game. And who knows? Maybe they walk out and prove everybody wrong and they start the RMAC schedule 2-0, which would be huge for them.
Yeah, without a doubt here. So, yeah. I mean, I'm just basically recapping what I already said here, but – I think, yeah, they're an ascending program. They're not quite the team that they were when we were around. I think they have a little bit more offensive firepower and even more reliable quarterback, in which will keep them in the game. But I think there are still certain little things here and there that they can improve down the stretch that will get them over the hump. But I think Truman will be just a little too much.
I think two out of the three of us are picking Truman. Dom's the only one on the Hard Rocker side. And that's a good time to start looking at the standings, which if you look now, so last week the RMAC went 6-4. The only teams to lose, Black Hills, Colorado Mesa got beat up a little bit. Fort Lewis, we've already talked about. And then New Mexico Highlands lost a 2-point game out in Portillo, New Mexico. They are still playing within New Mexico. They're playing Western New Mexico instead of Eastern New Mexico this week. But those are the four teams that are currently at the bottom of the standings. Everybody else, Adams, Chadron, Colorado Mines, CSU Pueblo, South Dakota Mines, and Western all started off their season 1-0. So they're all currently in a tie for first. Dom, I already got Rev's thoughts on who's going to win RMAC. Do you see anybody pushing Colorado Mines for that possible conference championship bid, or is this Colorado Mines' conference to lose?
I would say that it's Colorado Mines' conference to lose. If I wanted to throw a name in there, I guess I'd throw in two. In Colorado, at least in my opinion right now, the team that I would feel most comfortable saying they could kind of give Mines a run for their money would probably be Western. They, like I said, they're building really well. I know, kind of a shocker.
You will get no arguments on this show.
I know. I figured it would be a crowd favorite. Maybe a little surprising because I graduated from CSU Pueblo, and, you know, being an alumni, I do want to see them do well. With Rock still being there, I do want to see them do well. But I just feel like they are definitely behind the eight ball when it comes to building a program where they could potentially take over the RMAC. And so I would say in Colorado, Western would probably give them a run for their money. In general, I honestly can't off the top of my head think of anybody else to throw in the mix. I do think either way it's kind of it's kind of Mines, you know, Mines conference to lose. So we'll just see if they can be consistent like they have in the last few years. I don't think anybody's going to knock them off the top. So,
Rev, my question for you is a little bit different. Adams State, alphabetically, the way that you look at the website, they currently show as the quote number one team. Hopefully everybody gets my sarcasm and air quotes there. But is Adams State, do you think that they could be for real? Because they always have talent, but the fact that they turn over every single year, that seems to be the kryptonite, especially at the D2 level. Is Adams going to finish top five in the standings at the end of this season?
No, I don't see it that way simply because of the lack of continuity. And the lower you go when it comes to the divisions, I think that having that tradition in place, having that foundation, having people who aren't just going to go in and out as JUCOs after maybe one season or two seasons, it kind of gets in the way of having really good success. Even you see oftentimes in college basketball now, you'll see some of these teams that you don't expect to make runs knock out a number one or number two seed because they have veterans on the team. They have continuity to make postseason runs. And ultimately, I think that's working against a team like Adam State, which they're always going to have very good offensive talent, but maybe a lack of team culture and then a defense that has a tendency to self-destruct. Sometimes it'll keep them away. But, yeah, the way I see it is, Mines is conference to lose. However, there are maybe four teams in there. I'll add Black Hill State in there just simply due to how much they competed against a Division I team last week as a team that can maybe get that second place spot, which I really think is up for grabs between them, Mines, Pueblo, and Western.
Let's so we have the standings talk here just to finish out. We're almost wrapping up. The schedule for the weekend, Black Hills is going to Bolivar, Missouri to play Southwest Baptist University. South Dakota Mines, we already mentioned, is heading up to Kirksville to play Truman State. Augustana will be heading to Shadron, Nebraska to play the Eagles. UT Permian Basin will be in Gunnison at the soccer stadium to play Western Colorado. Mesa trying to bounce back, but that's another tough task. They're playing the D1 schools, University of San Diego. So that one's probably going to be tough. They at least get to go to the beach because that is in San Diego. CSU Pueblo is in Allendale, Michigan, currently to play Grand Valley State. Mines will go to San Angelo, Texas to play the Angelo State Rams. Adams playing West Texas in Canyon, Texas. And Western New Mexico hosted by New Mexico Highlands in Las Vegas, New Mexico. And Fort Lewis wrapping up 8 p.m. start time, mountain time for that against Arizona Christian. That's out in Glendale. Maybe next week, Rev, when we come back, we'll be able to talk about a Fort Lewis Skyhawks victory. They're definitely trying to put everything together so they can get that. But oh my goodness, that is a tough that schedule. Like Dom said, they should be pretty competitive games. But that Fort Lewis game is what gives me the most pause, because if you go out there and get beat by Arizona Christian by 40, what do you do from there? Like I don't know what they would do after that situation.
Yeah, this losing streak has gone long enough. Like, I'm out here just waiting to see, oh, can they go to 2000? Like, hey, we've seen enough here. Like, I'm honestly hoping they get a win of some type. And, yeah, this is the only really gimme that's left on the schedule. So, and you can't call it a gimme, but the closest thing they have to a gimme.
If they win, we will have a full-on celebration party. I'll drink more beer than I've drank already in this episode, because that deserves a celebration. Dom, any last thoughts before we kind of send people off? We get the plugs in and everything else on the show.
You know, I'm just interested to see after week two, kind of where everybody falls into the standings. You know, I'm also interested to kind of look at the score of that Western New Mexico game. I honestly didn't even know they were a university until the new head coach at CSU Pueblo came in, and that's actually where he came from. So.
They used to be an RMAC team back in 2015. So, yeah. Hey, memory lane, the year before Jimmy got there, they were in our conference.
Right. And so, like, it's just going to be an interesting week. You don't really know necessarily where everybody falls truly in the standings until probably week two, week three. And so it's shaping up real nice. I think Colorado's representing very well so far, and we'll see what happens.
Rev, when Western New Mexico was in the RMAC for that 2015 season, was the game in Silver City or was it in Gunnison?
It was in Silver City, and that might have been – and yeah, it was when I was still redshirting, and that might have been the worst broadcasting crew I've ever heard. But, yeah, it was Silver City.
that's funny to say, because Rev is also a Quisby alumni, which is the Western Colorado radio station, which we broadcast all the Western Colorado athletic events. I've heard horror stories about the bus trip out to Silver City, and as bad as the hotel that we stayed at in Las Vegas is, Silver City is like the true New Mexico like ghetto. Like we would see bloodstains and bullet holes in the hotel if we were to go all the way out to Silver City. That's at least the story that my dad says from back in the 90s. I don't know if it's true. I don't know if it's still that way, but
I take his word for it. Hopefully.
Yeah. I hope I never have to stay in Silver City for more than 30 minutes to fill up gas and get a snack.
Easy. New Mexico is a beautiful state.
Albuquerque. We're talking about Silver City.
Yeah.
Did your coaches at CSU Pueblo Dome, because the coaches at Western always did that, hey, guys, we're going to Las Vegas, New Mexico.
No, they used some different choice words. We're going to Crap Hole, New Mexico.
Then again, there are some rough areas in Pueblo, too, so I'm sure you felt just at home.
Yeah, the funny thing is there was one time where somebody came speeding down on the other side of the road, and there was a cop right behind me, and I had my window rolled down, and the guy standing next to me – or not standing, he was in his car. The guy next to me rolled down his window and said to the cop, hey, are you going to go pull that guy over? He's going like 90. He goes, yeah, there's an active shooting threat like down the road. I think him going 90 is a little less of a priority than somebody with a gun. So,
just you never know what you're going to run into. Yeah. Rev, go ahead, plug your social medias. I know you don't have anything out currently, but I'm sure after whether the Steelers win or lose this weekend, you may have something new coming out for Belly Up.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. So it's Rev Coca, at Rev Coca. I don't know if you can see the at right there on the screen, but yeah, you can also search that name up on Belly Up Sports to see the content I've written so far. And it's definitely going to be plenty of talking points out of that San Francisco game. I'll be watching that very closely.
Dom, you're basically never on social media unless I ask you to come on the show. So, again, I appreciate you spending your Friday night with us. It's 8 o'clock here in Colorado, so I appreciate it. And anything else you want to tell the people before we get off and send them off to the RMAC weekend of football?
I mean, football's in full swing now. We're finally into the NFL season, week two of college football. It's a great time. There's actually stuff to watch on TV over the weekend. So I'm excited to see what happens this week and looking forward to seeing where everybody falls into the rankings.
If you haven't got enough of my face, I will be jumping on to at Realism Sports. So if you follow Terrell on Twitter or if you follow or subscribe to his social media channel, you'll be able to see me over there. Dom will not be joining me. I'm not going to keep him from doing whatever he wants for any longer. But we do. I'm in a fantasy league with those guys. So we're going to talk some crap. We're going to see our teams and talk about the week one schedule. New episode of Sunday Scaries will come out live this Sunday. I'm trying to get Christian Saez on, but if not, it'll just be me. Otherwise, a new episode of The Far End of the Bench will come out next Thursday, and you guys will be able to hear Top of the Mountain again next week. Be sure to follow at FEOTB Pod. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Be sure to subscribe to Variety Sports and follow them at Variety_Sports_. For myself, Jimmy Pilato, Dominic Pilato, thank you very much for coming on. And Rev, the Problem Coca, my co-host on this show, thank you guys very much for tuning in. We will see you all down the road.